June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples, breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Every college campus has some version of a campus ministry, a space where students can explore or maintain their faith. These groups typically offer Bible studies, worship services, and social events. For many, they provide a sense of community during a time of major transition. But in recent decades, a controversial religious group has quietly made its way onto campuses, posing as just another student ministry. It's called the International Church of Christ, or ICOC. Founded at the University of Florida in the 1970s, it quickly expanded to colleges across the country. Before long, former members began speaking out, describing a disturbing pattern of manipulation, control, and psychological abuse. They warned that the ICOC wasn't a church, it was a cult. And despite years of scrutiny, it's still active today, recruiting new members on campuses nationwide.
College is absolutely, admittedly, their fishing ground. It is their favorite fishing ground. They built this, they call it a church. They built their cult on campus students. They will tell you from the pulpit, that's where they go. They put all of their focus and energy into the campus ministries.
I'm Margot Gray. This week on Campus Files, the story of a cult hiding in plain sight on college campuses across the country.
I grew up in Puyallup, Washington, which is about 40 minutes outside of Seattle.
This is Shell. When she talks about her hometown, one word comes up a lot: gloomy.
If it's not raining in the Pacific Northwest, it's gray, it's misty, it's cloudy. People that live in gloomier climates do have seasonal depression. One fun fact, I one time was on The Price is Right, and I was in the audience and they said, tell us where you're from. I go, Puyallup, Washington. It's the rhubarb, topsoil, daffodil, and suicide capital of the world. And the guy in the audience goes, yeah, don't put her on the show. She's a real downer.
Life at home had its own kind of darkness. Her dad was always struggling. According to her mom, the Korean War had changed him. He returned a different man and slipped into alcoholism. And things only got harder after that.
His parents died when he was 18 and 20. So he lost both parents in a span of 2 years. He broke his back at work. He just lived in constant pain. He was in and out of depressive states.
One Christmas morning, Shell woke up to find her dad missing. Instead of opening presents, she and her brother spent the morning looking for him,
My dad had so many issues that when I graduated, I was pretty quick to get out of the rain and the suicide capital of the world.
Shell had her sights set on California. Ever since an eighth grade trip, she dreamed of its warm beaches, so different from the gray, chilly coastline back in Washington. She also knew she wanted a school with a film program, and Long Beach State fit the bill.
I'd heard that Steven Spielberg had went to Long Beach State, which he did. I didn't know till I got there that he only went there for a year because one of the professors told Steven Spielberg that he had no talent in film.
In 1989, Shell headed to Long Beach State, a 300-acre campus just a few miles from the Pacific Ocean.
I arrived in California just like Dorothy had gotten out, you know, into the land of Oz when her little house crashed there. I was just very naive, very naive. I didn't know much about life, just very much a small town girl that had fallen off the turnip truck and landed in California. So from there, I just tried to build a life, put myself through school financially.
Paying for school was no small task. Shell's mom helped when she could, but after her divorce, most of her income went to alimony. That meant Shell needed to find a job. And one afternoon, she passed a cheerful-looking diner that caught her eye.
I just marched in there and asked them if they were hiring, and they just hired me on the spot.
The place was called Ed DeBevick's, a 50s-themed diner where nothing was too over the top. Every waiter had a fake name. Shell went by Rosie. There was a live DJ, dancing, and the staff pretty much did whatever they wanted. So one day, when a couple asked for coffee creamer, Shell didn't think twice. She flung it across the room and accidentally hit them.
I think they got a kick out of that and was like, oh, we like this girl. And then from that point, they'd only sit at my table. They were odd. So much so that when they would come in, I'd be like, oh my gosh, that couple's here again. Do not put them at my table.
But whenever they came to the diner, they waited for a table in Shell's section to open up. And every time, it played out the same way. They ordered chicken fried steak and tried to talk her into going to church with them. They said they were members of a great non-denominational Christian church. What they didn't mention was the name. The International Church of Christ, or ICOC.
We go to this really awesome church. It's just awesome. You're going to meet awesome people. And Rosie, you should come. And you can be awesome, too, if you come to our church.
Church hadn't been a big part of Shell's childhood, just the occasional Easter service. But lately, she found herself growing more curious about religion.
But it wasn't coming from really a religious place. It was coming from my dad's experience. And why do some people have such an easy life and some people have such a hard life? And that always perplexed me. And so that made me dig and search.
Shell had even purchased a Bible, hoping she might find some answers in its pages.
When this couple kept asking me to church, I thought, well, maybe this is from God. Maybe God's trying to get my attention. Maybe he sent them in here, right? And I'd always been very idealistic, very much a dreamer, very much a do-gooder. Really wanted to help the world, leave my mark. Wanted to tell stories through film. Just very emotional. Everything meant something to me. I was that kind of person. Like, I saw the signs.
Even if this were her sign to try church, Shell wasn't sure this oddball couple was who she wanted to go with. But they were relentless, and eventually, she just couldn't say no anymore.
I had enough courtesy in me where I was like, well, they've asked me 20 times. I've used all my excuses. What could be so bad about church?
Shell agreed to attend church on Father's Day Sunday, 1990. And from the start, things felt strange.
We met in a parking lot to drive together to the service. So when I got in their minivan, it was full of other visitors, people that had never been to church before. I just thought, well, this is weird. All these people, we don't know each other. So they introduced everybody. And when we got to the service, she marched me around like a prize. This is my visitor, Rosie. Isn't she cute? We met her at Ed to Bevix. She's so awesome. And everyone's like, Rosie, we've heard about you.
Once the mingling wrapped up, Shell was led to a seat in the front row. There was lively singing, a few welcome remarks. And then one by one, a series of couples took to the stage to share emotional testimonies about the church.
And they get up and share about how much this particular church was the only reason they've changed. There's no other place. This is the place. I'd be dead without this place. We'd be divorced without this place. Everything was about the group.
Then things took an even stranger turn. It was time for the sermon. And who walks up to the front? The husband from the diner. He'd never mentioned he was a leader in the church.
And he got up and just started preaching hardcore. Just the scary scriptures. You know, if you don't do this, you will go to hell scriptures. So then I start thinking, what have I gotten myself into?
Shell felt a tightness in her chest. Looking back, she thinks it was a panic attack. She turned to the woman who'd brought her and said she needed some air. Then she bolted outside, searching for a payphone to call someone, anyone, to come get her. In the end, she had no choice but to wait for the couple to drive her home. But home offered no relief. That same evening, Shell's mom called with devastating news. Her father, just 47 years old, had taken his own life. The shock and grief were overwhelming. She was so consumed by it all, she completely forgot about the strange events of the day. Until the couple called.
So then they called that night, not knowing, saying, oh, we loved having you at service today. How are you doing? We want to set up some Bible studies with you. I start sobbing and just unload everything that had happened with my dad. And the things that they said that I'll never forget were the fear they instantly tried to instill in me. It was, oh my gosh, do you see what God is trying to do? They said, God is your father now. God knew your dad was going to die today. He stepped in to be your true father. And Rosie, you better listen or something worse is going to happen to you.
In that moment, Shell started to wonder if they were right. Maybe this was a sign from above. Maybe she was meant to join the church. What Shell didn't realize was that she wasn't the only one having those thoughts. All across the country, college students were being pulled in, subtly, persistently, and often at their most vulnerable. And before long, Shell wouldn't just be attending services. She'd be recruiting new college members.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or dsw.com.
On June 16th, 1990, Shell's life was turned upside down. Her father had died by suicide at just 47 years old. She was left in shock. And it was in this moment of grief that the couple from the diner had called her that night.
It was just such a traumatic experience that you probably could have presented a lot of things to me that in that moment I would have considered when I wouldn't normally have considered it. So when they swooped in with the, oh my God, look at the timing, God's trying to get your attention, all that stuff, they had me.
Shell hadn't liked a single thing about the church service. But in the haze of grief, she said yes to Bible studies. Maybe it would help her keep her mind off everything else.
There's this really kind of famous, trendy little hangout there called The Kettle. And it's right by the pier. Everybody hangs out down there. And so they invited me to The Kettle to do a Bible study. And so, again, I thought, well, that sounds pretty innocuous. What could be wrong with that?
Shell had pictured Bible study as something casual, like a book club, with fellow college students chatting and loosely discussing scripture. But the conversation quickly turned intense.
This study ends with, if you're not a disciple and you're not making disciples, like Jesus said, you are not a Christian and you are lost. So you will go to hell. And this is why God is trying to get your attention and God sent us to you.
By the end of the Bible study, Shell was freaked out and the group could sense it. So they changed tactics. Looking back, she describes what followed as love bombing, which is when someone overwhelms you with praise and affection to win your trust.
And the love bombing is, hey, let's go for a run on the beach. Hey, come to this party we're having. Hey, let's do this. Hey, let's do that. Like a couple events I was at in LA, some of them would just show up. And I'm like, how did you even know I was here? It was odd.
Shell may have been put off by their enthusiasm and overbearing presence. But at the same time, it was comforting to have a group rallying around her during such a difficult period. She was all alone on a new college campus, and they offered a sense of belonging at a moment when she needed it most.
My circle was small because I wasn't really social. I was working till 1 a.m., classes, papers. So I just didn't have a lot of time to be social. So that really worked in their favor because I didn't have anyone contradicting what I was doing.
Meaning there was no one outside the group to tell Shell this wasn't normal, that the group's constant presence was crossing a line. It's only in hindsight that she describes it as love bombing. And it's a tactic the group often used when new college recruits showed hesitation about committing to Bible studies.
So they will tailor it to the human. That's why some people take a year to go through the studies and some people maybe 2 weeks. It's how eager are you? In their terms, once someone is broken, they can move fast. They'll say it takes longer to break some people. These are their actual terms. So at some point, they've worn you down so much, you just give in and you go, okay, fine, I'll be baptized.
Shell says it took approximately 3 months for them to break her. And in September 1990, she was baptized in the Pacific Ocean.
Those waters in the Pacific Ocean are freezing in September, especially at 9 p.m. It's dark. We all have flashlights. I get down to the beach and there is a ton of people there. People I've never met in my life. They're all in a circle. We're singing. They read scriptures.
Then Shell was baptized in the freezing water, officially becoming a member of the group. From that moment on, everything changed. The love bombing ended and the work began. As a member, she was now required to donate a portion of every paycheck to the group, supposedly to support mission teams across the country. On paper, the expectation was 10% of every paycheck. But in reality, she was pressured to give much more. That was no small ask, especially for someone already putting herself through school.
You sell your jewelry, you sell your antiques, you sell your belongings, you sell your TV, you sell everything. They get you in such a fever pitch, such a frenzy about saving the world. You know, Jesus shed his blood on a cross for you and you won't sell your TV?
Members were willing to do just about anything. College students skipped meals, picked up extra jobs. Shell knew one friend who sold her plasma and another who sold bone marrow. She even heard of students handing over their college tuition money to the church. Then came the other major responsibility, recruitment, to go out on campus and, quote, make disciples of all nations. The group's guiding scripture was Matthew 28, 18 through 20, which calls on believers to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you.
You can't be a part of this group unless you agree to go make disciples of all nations, which means you will recruit for us, or you cannot make it to heaven.
Nobody's saved unless they follow this scripture,
which is a really brilliant way to build a pyramid.
Each member had actual quotas, specific numbers of people they were expected to recruit into the group.
Everything was stats and numbers. How many people got baptized? How many people did you have at church with you? What was our total attendance? The people that didn't have visitors had to line up against the wall and face the wall, and then all got what they call being rebuked, which means yelled at, scolded, berated, called faithless, because they didn't have a visitor with them at church.
As Shell quickly learned, college campuses were the group's primary recruiting ground. In fact, as she'd later discover, the group had started on a college campus at the University of Florida.
They were having so much impact and success on the college campuses that that's when that plan was hatched, that would be their focus.
College students weren't just a target. They were the lifeblood of the organization. But for many, membership didn't end at graduation. Not even close. And certainly not for Shell. She would go on to spend the next 17 years inside the church.
DMV summers are no joke. The heat, the humidity, the beltway at 5 p.m. AC season is here and your car needs to keep up. Rota is the DMV's most trusted auto shop with over 1,000 five-star Google reviews. From AC checks to oil changes to detailing, we keep your car ready with no hidden fees and no pressure. Plus, free valet pickup and drop-off, so you don't have to lift a finger. Book at rota.com and save 20% on maintenance, repairs, or detailing with code POD20.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Shell graduated from college in 1996, 6 years after she first enrolled. She'd been forced to drop out when juggling classes with the demands of the ICOC became too much. Eventually, she begged the church to let her return to school. They agreed, but on one condition. She had to transfer to Cal State Fullerton and lead their campus ministry there. Life after college looked nothing like the future she'd once imagined. Shell had once dreamed of becoming a famous filmmaker. But after graduation, nearly every waking moment was consumed by the ICOC. She attended services, led Bible studies, raised money, and recruited new members. She also spent hours serving the group's senior leaders, doing whatever they needed, whenever they asked.
You are at their beck and call. You're free babysitting, cleaning their homes, helping them move when they need to move houses, showing up for anything they need, doing their laundry. So you have zero free time. Every minute was micromanaged. I was literally told when I could even do my laundry. One day I did my laundry instead of something that they asked me to do, and I got rebuked for being selfish.
Shell likens her daily existence in the group to being in a prison, which begs the question, if she felt so trapped, why didn't she just leave? For one, she had nowhere else to turn. The church had become her entire world.
In 17 years that I was in the group, I moved 30 times. So it's a lot of upheaval. The only constant was the group. That's your only constant. Everything else is disheveled. If you've lived in a city for 5 years, you make friends, you know the grocery clerk, you know your neighbors. You have community elsewhere. There was no community except the group, and they designed it that way on purpose.
Then there was the deeper fear, what leaving the church might mean for her salvation.
Everything they teach you is your salvation is on the line on a daily basis. You step out of line at any point and you could lose your salvation, which means you're going to go to hell. Then your family's going to go to hell because you won't be around to save them. So it's this very painful tightrope you're walking of, I believe what they're saying, but I'm miserable and I don't want to be here.
The most painful part of Shell's experience came several years in, when it was time for marriage. In the ICOC, members are only allowed to marry other members, and they aren't allowed to get to know each other beforehand.
I married a stranger. I did not realize I'd be marrying a narcissist. I did not realize how emotionally stunted he was. So our marriage was pretty horrific from the honeymoon on, because once I spent 24 hours with him, I was like, oh my God, what have I done?
Shell says her husband was emotionally neglectful and controlling. And over time, especially after they had kids, she struggled more and more with having to submit to him.
And so I was always getting in trouble about being an unsubmissive wife, rebellious. He was constantly told to get me in line. Bro, get your wife in line. You know, that kind of thing. The women are second-class citizens in this group. You have to be submissive. This didn't feel like it was coming from God anymore. It was something that was clearer to me than the issues in the cult, because they were so good at weaponizing the Bible and twisting the scriptures. That was more confusing. My marriage was clear.
As Shell began to assess her marriage, she slowly started to question the group she'd followed so obediently for years. Why were women expected to be submissive to men? Why did the leaders wield so much control? Why did the group need so much money? And where was the money actually going?
I actually thank my marriage for getting me out of the cult, because it was something I couldn't justify. And I refused for my children to think that this was the standard of a marriage. I just couldn't stay. It was just that bad.
In the end, Shell walked away from it all. She left the church and she left her husband. Fortunately, her mom and stepdad were there to support her and help her start putting her life back together.
My parents to this day, they are definitely my saviors. I actually feel really bad for people that don't have that resource and help to get out. I can see how it's harder for people to get out that don't have someone that they can lean on and rely on.
Even with her parents behind her, starting over was anything but easy. Leaving the church was one thing, but unlearning the doctrine she'd absorbed for 17 years was something else entirely.
When I first got out, I would say it took me about a year to convince myself that I wasn't going to hell, and to remind myself that what they were teaching was false. I had seen it, I had felt it, I knew it, but it still took me a year to just find my footing of what I was going to do with my life.
Since leaving the ICOC, Shell has founded a wellness company and pursued several entrepreneurial ventures. But her primary focus is advocacy, warning others about the dangers of the ICOC and other similar cultic groups. Today, she and her attorney, Bob Samini, have filed a series of lawsuits against the International Church of Christ, alleging that its leaders concealed the sexual and emotional abuse of women and children.
so when we filed these lawsuits, we had a rush of phone calls.
Thousands and thousands of stories I've received in this process. I just took on that role of a whistleblower, and all these stories started funneling through me. I knew a lot was bad and going on because I lived it. I honestly didn't know it was this bad. I didn't know that I was going to hear stories that would bring me to my knees.
In addition to advocating for victims of the ICOC, Shell is focused on prevention, trying to stop people from getting pulled in to begin with. She launched an organization called Free to Be, which targets what she sees as the front lines, college campuses. Her organization is especially active on Boston campuses, where the ICOC has had a strong foothold since the 1990s.
So much so that I'd say within a year, might have been 2 years, they started getting kicked off the universities. So they've been kicked off of Harvard several times, Boston University several times. Basically, any main campus university in Massachusetts, they have been kicked off of, or they have had issues, warnings, parents calling in, a couple police reports we found, because they hunt on the campus universities. So here we are. This was in, again, the 90s. Here we are, fast forward to 2025. It is still happening in the Boston area.
And not just in Boston. The group has a presence on college campuses all across the country, and they're hard to track, often hiding behind new names to avoid scrutiny. At Northwestern, for example, the group goes by the name Meta. Shell says that's why Free to Be is partnering with colleges to educate students and parents during freshman orientation. One key warning sign: if a group keeps pushing specific scripture, like the one about making disciples of all nations, it could be a red flag. In response to Shell's efforts to spread awareness, the ICOC has tried to smear her reputation. They've accused her of chasing fame and money. Some have even called her evil and claimed she's following Satan.
If they were really God-fearing, Jesus-loving, Bible-walking people like they claim to be, they would allow the truth to be told. I don't have a problem with humans making mistakes. I don't even have a problem with people being fanatical about their religion. You do you. Have at it. But I have a problem when you abuse people and then you lie about it and then you keep doing it. That is the problem. And maybe the biggest part of that problem is they're doing it to campus students. They are targeting campus students. They're exploiting them. They are defiling their minds. They're kidnapping their brains. They're holding their souls hostage. And I know that because they did it to me.
Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Margot Gray. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprunkheiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.